This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Earlier this week, two of the people who work at the Office of Education Policy, the OEP at the University of Arkansas, joined us in the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
Correct. Michael Crouch is the school performance evaluator, and Dr. Gary Ritter is the director of that office.
The OEP at the University of Arkansas, along with the Northwest Arkansas Council, this week released the 2012 Northwest Arkansas report card.
Right. It kind of evaluates how schools in the area are doing in comparison to the rest of the state and the nation.
And it's fair to say that the intent of this is all publicly available information. The intent of this is to actually create more questions than answers.
Right.
I think the first way to look at this is it tells you what data are available about the schools. And I think that's important. I would caution almost immediately not to draw evaluative conclusions from just looking at the raw data. So, for example, a snapshot might show that Bentonville has higher raw scores than Prairie Grove. And we wouldn't necessarily want to look at that and say, oh, therefore Bentonville must be doing something better than Prairie Grove. Because as the data show and the report shows, we're serving different student populations district by district by district. So we want to pay attention to all of that. However, you might look at this, and some of the superintendents in the more rural schools have said to us, this is nice that the data are compiled. In fact, they'd like more of their rural districts highlighted here. They said, oh, you know, that's a school district that looks like us, and they seem to be doing better in science than we are. Maybe we should get together and see what's going on. And again, these are data that anyone could look up. We pulled publicly available data from the web, but those folks are too busy running schools. That's their job. Their job isn't to gather data.
So. Well, I was about to ask. I prefaced that with lay people, but apparently there are people that are, you know, elbow deep in education administration that haven't seen all these figures together.
I think that's right, and I think it's because they're elbow deep in education administration.
They don't have the
time. they're very busy doing their job, and we have the really good fortune of being paid to gather data and analyze data and ask questions that we find interesting. And in fact, I would suggest that we use these data more to generate questions than to derive certain answers.
And one thing that when we were planning this report, we wanted it to tell a story. Start at the very beginning, everyone starts out in their own community. So we start off with community profiles, and we tell the story of the test for younger children, the benchmark, the ITBS. Then we go on to high school indicators, then on to college. So we try to see, what does it look like for a student growing up in the Northwest Arkansas region?
So it's not only a compilation for administrators that just don't have time, but also for people that are considering moving here with their families.
I think that's the original purpose for the report. So the Northwest Arkansas Council, who has sponsored this report for the past couple of years, they were interested in just organizing the data on the region because they had forever dealt with employees who were thinking of moving here whose spouses or significant others said, you're not moving me to Arkansas. Or parents with young kids who said, I don't want to go there because of the schools. There's some perception of what the schools are. Our schools statewide end up roughly in the middle, slightly below the national average, which isn't bad when you take into account that we deal with a higher rate of poverty than most states. But nevertheless, the business leaders in the region, folks who are trying to recruit talent here, wanted to have some document that says, look, these districts that you might be concerned with, they've got kids scoring at the 60th percentile in science across the nation, not just in Arkansas, but across the nation. And so that's the benefit, perhaps, for the wider population.
You mentioned student population and district profiles. And of the big five, three of them have grown considerably over the last 7 years. I mean, Bentonville, their student population grew 53%. Springdale, 34%. Siloam Springs, 20%. What challenges are facing these districts?
Rogers and Springdale and Siloam were dealing with a large number of students who speak English as a second language, and they're having to figure out how to work, particularly with literacy with these students, but of course that can be challenging in every subject area. And in particular, Rogers seems to be doing a really nice job with that when we look at their subgroup data, when we look at the data of the kids who are free and reduced lunch, who are limited English proficiency students. They're doing remarkably well compared to other limited English proficiency students or other free and reduced lunch students across the state. The growth challenges in Bentonville are slightly different. They don't have the large fraction of high poverty students or limited English proficiency students, but they do have just enormous growth. And they had to deal with that a year ago. You probably followed it when they decided if they were going to continue with one mega school, build a few small schools around a mega school, or split up the one mega school into two kind of mega schools. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what they chose to do. And so there's all sorts of challenges with growth that need to be met. And in fact, if you look at these stats, you might look at Bentonville and say, it's great for everyone. Look at the test scores. But if your option is one gigantic high school, it's certainly likely that there are a few kids who, even if their test scores are good, might prefer a different environment. The education community is reacting to that in Bentonville and trying to create options so more kids are satisfied and learning well.
You mentioned that people should really use caution if they're using this report card to evaluate things. Human nature being human nature, people will look at numbers and compare. Does it make you wince at all knowing that you're putting out a report card that some people will use in an evaluative way?
That's a great question, and we have that a lot, because a lot of what we do is we create databases where in our Office for Education Policy at the websites, we have databases listing every school district in the state with their scores, and one could simply use Excel to rank from highest to lowest and draw conclusions. What we do to try and mediate that is we make sure to put context data very near the testing data, as we do across this report. We also suggest and say every time we're asked, we shouldn't make evaluative statements just on these data alone. Nevertheless, if the other option is to not share data, and we have decided that our mission at the Office for Education Policy is to help make information transparent, make data transparent. So yes, it does make me wince, but hiding data would make me wince more.
One of our latest efforts is an idea called a Similar Schools Index. We try to compare, like it says, a similar school to an apples-to-apples comparison. For example, one school district that is large and in a low poverty area shouldn't be compared to a small, high poverty area school.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, you have teacher pay, you have amount of teachers that have more than a bachelor's, and you have scores. There's that idea that, oh, I can connect two easy dots and I come up with this answer. But that's exactly not what should be done.
I think what we're hoping is it generates questions. So we might see a pattern that appears in the data. And then, ideally, a school leader or one of us or someone who sees it or a newspaper reporter might approach and say, hey, does this appear to be true? And we have all the data where we can conduct slightly more sophisticated analysis to try and tease out these other indicators, as you suggested, poverty, school size, other socioeconomic stuff, to try and figure out, is there a true pattern? And we also, it's hard for our eyes to recognize a pattern. We might look at three schools and say, oh, it looks like there's a pattern there. Well, you're not going to derive a true pattern off of three schools, but with 1,100 schools in the state, we may be able to see if there is a true pattern.
And when we're looking at those 1,100 schools and in comparison to Northwest Arkansas, 13 out of the 17 school districts in Northwest Arkansas scored better than Arkansas as a state. And you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier with talking about how Arkansas is kind of in the 50th percentile nationwide. To me, that doesn't seem like, you know, that's that great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 50% is good. And if you're a native Arkansan, it's better than it's been. But it's no reason to rest.
It's certainly no reason to rest statewide. While we're, and 50% is a bit generous, we're a bit below average.
Okay.
But still, it's comparison to the common lore. That's not the case. So, but you're right. There's certainly no reason to rest by any means. There are lots of innovations we can engage in that would have a chance to result in better outcomes. And maybe they wouldn't. In social science research, it's hard to find stuff that works. We find more things that don't work than do work. All I think we can hope for are a set of policymakers and leaders who continue to try new things, keep an eye on the data as they try new things, and hold themselves accountable so that they're willing to discard things when they don't work. There are pockets of excellence. There are areas where our kids are performing at the 70th percentile, the 65th percentile. Then again, even in some of our perceived to be best districts, we can look and see graduation rates that are around 80 to 85%. So even in areas of relative affluence in this town in which we sit, 15% of the kids who start in ninth grade are not completing high school with a degree. That's really bad news.
If one of the statewide goals is to get more people with bachelor's degrees, a higher percentage, having 15% who are not getting a high school degree seems problematic.
I think so. And in this project, we've been engaged a great deal with folks in the higher ed world, and we're learning that the higher ed world doesn't consist of only four-year degrees or nothing else. But it's possible that this is the message lots of kids go to high school with. So one reason, and this is conjecture and not based on great data, it's based on experience. Nevertheless, one hypothesis we're generating is that it's not surprising that kids in high school exit out if they don't feel like they're interested in a four-year college degree, and the signal they're getting is four-year college degree is it. Otherwise, there's no reason to be hanging around here. There are lots of good options, even in this area, for post-secondary schooling, which aren't four-year degrees, and lots of good jobs that would be connected to them for kids after they graduate. And the idea, I don't believe, is that we need to train kids for the economy, but I think we need to set up our schools so the kids have the ability to make choices when they're older.
You also looked at some of the three major institutions of higher learning in the two counties, JBU, University of Arkansas, and Northwest Arkansas Community College. There was something called institutional cost effectiveness. Help me out.
Sure. So this is a measure that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce originally came up with, and the idea is looking at out of the degrees completed, so not just how many students go in, but how many diplomas are actually handed out at the end of the day, a six-year graduation rate for a four-year institution. And out of that, how much money was spent on that? First, you have the overall money that was spent on it, but also there's good government records that are kept on how much money the state, local, or federal dollars go towards those schools and those degrees. So then we're able to do a little bit of math and come up with this institutional cost effectiveness number. How much of that money is being spent on each degree completed, and then how much of that money is coming from a state, local, federal entity. And it provides some interesting data on how efficient we are with our educational system, and also how many of those students we're retaining. You could either spend less money in order to get a degree, or you could graduate more students. If you're doing your job to the best of your ability, you're graduating more students and bringing the dividing number up to give you a lot better return for your money.
We're now beginning what the Arkansas Scholarship Lottery has been around a couple of years. We had two classes go in, two freshman classes.
It started in 2010.
It was passed in 2008. The initial scholarships went out in 2010, yes.
So the people who were freshmen in 2010 and people who were freshmen in 2000.
Right, so you graduated high school in 2010. You're right. A college freshman 2010-11.
So we're in the third class now.
And you include the statistics on how many of those have been renewed.
And those are simple descriptive statistics. You would expect that those who renew were smarter to begin with. On the margin, they're going to be better students. But being on one side of the margin or the other doesn't guarantee that you're going to get your scholarship renewed. A lot of doing well in college is a simple matter of hard work. But overall, we're looking at the numbers and what type of predictors we can use to predict whether or not they'll retain their scholarship, and then looking at actual college numbers to see how they did.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Michael Crouch and Gary Ritter are with the Office of Education and Policy at the University of Arkansas. Kyle and I spoke with them earlier this week.